This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The review of controversial statues in Chicago includes some of President Abe Lincoln.
Being judged by today's standards, I think it's somewhat unfair. I think you have to hold them against a measuring stick of the day.
Lincoln College President David Gerlach says if Chicago doesn't want the statues, he'll come collect them himself. Plus, State Senator Jason Berrickman says Democrats should wait for the census data they so dearly wanted before redistricting. LGBTQ groups in Bloomington Normal are having a conversation with Republican lawmakers about legislation on sex ed for children as young as kindergarten and how tough it is for trans people to change gender on a birth certificate. And State Farm has some lofty goals to reduce carbon emissions. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Republican Congressman Rodney Davis says there's a light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to vaccine distribution. Davis says to be patient with the process if you're not yet eligible or can't find an appointment. He says vaccine production will ramp up significantly over the next few weeks.
Just like remember a year ago, nobody could get PPE. Now you can buy masks everywhere. No one's worried about hand sanitizer or toilet paper. That's going to happen with vaccines because we are producing and producing and producing.
McLean County trails the state in vaccination rates. About 13.5% of county residents are fully vaccinated. Illinois' rate is about 16.5%. Health officials say the infrastructure is there to give more shots. Supply remains an issue. U.S. Representative Darren LaHood says he's now fully vaccinated against COVID-19, and he suggests vaccine-shy people talk with doctors.
Don't listen to me as a politician or an elected official. You ought to listen to your medical professional. Whoever your doctor is, maybe you talk to a nurse, talk to your medical professionals. Those are the people that understand the science. They understand this vaccine. They understand the pandemic, and they're the ones recommending that.
An NPR PBS NewsHour poll earlier this month shows vaccine hesitancy runs highest among Republican men, with 49% saying they will not get vaccinated. LaHood says society can't return to normal until enough people get vaccinated to build up herd immunity. A recent U-High graduate was one of two Iowa State University students who died in a weekend boating accident. Police in Hamilton County, Iowa, identify the victims as 19-year-old Derek Nanny, a freshman chemistry major from Normal, and 20-year-old Yaakov Ben-David from Washington, D.C. Nanny and Ben-David were members of Iowa State's crew team. They were on a boat that flipped in a lake north of Ames, Iowa, Sunday morning. A dive team recovered one of the bodies from the water Sunday. Rescue crews found the other late yesterday. 30 McLean County residents are hospitalized with COVID-19. That's the county's highest total since mid-January. It continues a six-week trend of increasing hospitalizations. The McLean County Health Department says 88% of intensive care beds in Bloomington Normal are full. That marks the highest percentage since late December. The county reports 29 new coronavirus cases. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA continues its educational video series, Hear My Story, with local patient Robert Handley.
The providers at Bloomington Normal Audiology are all doctors of audiology. They have gone that next step, so they're medical professionals.
Robert's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Bloomington Normal LGBTQ residents and allies are telling area legislators about their wants and needs. They favor certain pieces of legislation and say they hope for lawmakers' support. Christine Hatfield has more on a virtual town hall to highlight issues still facing the community.
The legislators at the event were all Republicans. They had a measured response to most of the proposals brought up during the evening. One bill that came up would mandate sex education for public schools starting in kindergarten. State Senator Jason Berkman says he thinks there will be some resistance to the bill because of how early students would start learning sex education, though supporters say it creates age-appropriate standards depending on grade levels. Berkman says some of the provisions in the bill already exist in state law. He says he's not ruling out supporting the bill.
It's always good to go and look at whether what is in the law reflects what Illinoisans' expectations are. And it is possible that some revision needs to be made there.
Brian Johnson is the CEO of the LGBTQ group Equality Illinois, which helped present the town hall. He says the aim is not to micromanage how certain topics are taught in the classroom.
We teach math at all grade levels, but it doesn't mean we teach long division in kindergarten. Nothing in this bill requires educators to remove their expertise when it comes to deciding what is age appropriate.
Community member Amanda Breeden says young kids are able to grasp topics such as bullying and gender identity. And she says those children need the support of the entire community.
We need more than just the people on that base ground foundational level doing the work in their communities already. We need protections for these kids.
Another bill mentioned would decriminalize HIV. Current state law makes it a crime to engage in certain behaviors without disclosing an HIV-positive status. Advocates for decriminalization say keeping HIV criminalized discourages people from getting tested. Dave Bentlin is president of the Prairie Pride Coalition. The group was one of the event sponsors. Bentlin says HIV criminalization laws are an outdated product of a time when HIV was just starting to attract attention. He says those measures were drafted and passed in haste.
Legislators, quite honestly, were looking for any way that they could act to look like they were taking action on this pandemic.
State Representative Dan Brady says the current law is just one part of bills legislators in the 1980s saw as necessary, and he says he wants to see a bigger picture approach.
I hope it becomes a part of a comprehensive study instead of piecemealing certain things. Do we need a bigger comprehensive approach of repealing some of the things that were put on the books back in the 80s.
The lawmakers present had many questions about a bill to make it easier for trans people to change the gender on their birth certificates. Dave Bentlin says trans people currently need a letter from a doctor to make that change.
The people who want to do this are people who have gone through a lot of thought and time, counseling oftentimes, medical procedures, and they would like the ability to do this in a more efficient way.
Dan Brady was an architect of legislation 20 years ago to make the filing of birth and death records an electronic process. He says he'd support the proposal.
I would think there has to be a pathway to respect the documentation side of it, but yet make it more of a streamlined process.
Community members are also talking about ways to help LGBTQ people in the Twin Cities. Lori Bell says downtown Bloomington would be a good place for a community center.
People know that an LGBT community center is good for the local economy and it's good for the safety of the community. It's, you know, they're positive wherever we build them, you know, people come and they're positive for everyone, not just for LGBTQ people specifically.
Budget pressures often place limits on what the state can do. Representative Dan Brady says, though, local grassroots efforts could help make a community center and other local initiatives a reality. Community members also told the lawmakers the community has changed a lot over the last four decades. Here's Dave Bentlin.
We're not always on the forefront of developments like community centers for LGBTQI plus community, but I think the momentum is there. And I think in order to make our community a more welcoming place for everyone, that it will take more than legislation.
Bentlin says Bloomington Normal is not the conservative place it once was, but he says the LGBTQ parts of the community need support from elected officials to keep making progress. I'm Christine Hatfield.
This is 89.1 FM WGLT on WGLT.org. State Farm says it will reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by half by 2030. That's the big takeaway from the Bloomington-based insurer's first environmental, social, and governance report released today. It comes as insurance companies are increasingly concerned with climate change and its impact on costly severe weather events like wildfires and hurricanes. Ryan Denham speaks with State Farm Vice President of Administrative Services Jenny Greminger, who oversees its Enterprise Environmental Sustainability team. Greminger explains how they're going to reach that goal.
We recently finalized a renewable power purchase agreement for City Line and the Richardson Data Center, which are both of our major facilities in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We are also exploring sustainable solutions for fleet vehicles, energy-efficient capital projects, virtual power purchase agreements, and green natural gas. So we've got a lot that we're looking into and just kind of doing a deep dive in.
You mentioned some of the renewable energy stuff you're looking to do at the hub locations. What about facilities in Bloomington, Illinois here? I would assume those buildings are a little bit older. And I wonder, does that make it harder to achieve your sustainability goals? And what goals do you have in mind for these Bloomington properties?
Yeah, Ryan, you're spot on. It is more difficult, but it is absolutely on the table. And so we have to approach it a little bit different. So we lease our buildings, for example, the ones that I mentioned in Dallas, we lease those. And so, we've got a tenant relationship. And here in Bloomington, we own the facilities here. So we've got kind of different, it's not really an apples-to-apples comparison, but some commitment in Bloomington we are absolutely looking into. It's just a different approach.
Do you have an example of what you'd be looking into in Bloomington?
You know, right now, we're really open to, we're going to have to look into wind. We're going to have to look into solar. We're already doing some things that are going to reduce emissions. Those are more internal practices. So we eliminated all plastic from our facilities in terms of vending machines, cafeterias. We're eliminating all that single-use plastic. We are going to reduce, if not eliminate, desktop printers and just discourage that printing of paper. We've got a lot of customer initiatives that will reduce that amount of paper. So right now we've got a lot of initiatives that we're doing internally, and we're also looking at just how, with these great big buildings, how do we run them more efficiently and just more green.
So State Farm is also looking at, more sustainable options for your giant fleet of vehicles. What are you looking at there?
We're going to follow the science, and we're going to ensure that we have proper metrics in terms of the kinds of strategies that we develop and then what initiatives we actually chase. And so it's so important that you understand what your emissions are. And obviously, we have a very big fleet of vehicles, and that is where we see great opportunity to reduce our greenhouse gas emission. Now, what that will look like, we're setting a number of different options, but certainly we're learning a lot through this environment that COVID has forced us into in terms of how do you just work differently. And so there's going to be an effort that says, how do we just overall reduce our fleet? And then for those fleet vehicles that we do need, what is the best alternative there?
The science certainly points to climate change affecting the severity of some of these big weather events that your customers experience and you experience yourself as a company. Can you connect the dots for me between climate change and the business case for some of these changes?
Yeah, as I mentioned, we're going to chase the science. And so there is there's a lot of data out there that suggests things that a business like ours can do to reduce not only our greenhouse gas emission, but also how do we help the customer reduce theirs? So I'll give you an example. In a severe weather event, certainly we want to help our customer recover as quickly as possible. And so a wind-resistant type of shingle, for example, we're going to study that technology, for example, so that the impact to the customer in a severe weather event is minimized. And if you think about that, if we can, and I'll just use this shingle example, if we can help them with a shingle that through a severe weather event stays on their home, all of a sudden we have impacted having another shingle and another shingle and another shingle manufactured because they just keep coming off. And so eventually, you know, they're greenhouse gas, obviously, all goods and services, or goods, excuse me, that are manufactured, put off some emission, and the more we can reduce that, everybody kind of wins in it. The environment wins, we help the customer, and we reduce the severity and frequency of their claim.
That's State Farm Vice President of Administrative Services Jenny Greminger speaking with Ryan Denham. The Environmental, Social, and Governance Snapshot also includes progress reports on diversity and inclusion initiatives within the company, as well as corporate philanthropy. You can find a link to the full report at WGLT.org. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Monuments to Honest Abe could no longer have a home in Chicago, but the president of Lincoln College says they're always welcome in central Illinois. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot assembled a committee to review dozens of controversial monuments, including several statues of Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln College President David Gerlach says if Chicago doesn't want the statues, he'll come collect them himself. WGLT's Dana Vollmer talks to Gerlach about why tributes to Lincoln hold value despite his imperfect legacy.
His dealing with Native Americans, some have argued, were troubling. Death sentences, he overturned 200 and some in relation to a Native American revolt that occurred, but 30 some were hung. And so he's not without fault. His views on slavery, he thought a resolution would have been Liberia. Well, many thought that at the time, sending African Americans to Liberia. Even turn of the century, W.E.B. Du Bois felt Liberia was an alternative and actually moved to Africa himself. Being judged by today's standards, I think it's somewhat unfair. I think you have to hold them against a measuring stick of the day. And certainly in his day, Lincoln was profoundly progressive.
Lincoln College has a large Black student population. It's more than a quarter of the student body. Do you worry at all about the message it kind of sends to those students in defending Lincoln's legacy?
I would say not at all. I have not, in my 6 years, heard a single comment of critique of the overall body of what Lincoln accomplished for us. In fact, I sense there is a great amount of pride from our students. The number one photography spot during commencement is the 6'4" walking Lincoln statue that sits outside our Lincoln Heritage Museum. When the college has had vigils during some of the more tragic events over my tenure, the seated young Lincoln at the front of the campus has been the gathering spot of students finding some sense of solace. Students proudly wear our athletic jerseys with Lincoln's name on it. They are screaming on behalf of Lincoln. I think there's a great amount of pride.
Christopher Columbus has kind of become the poster child for the removal of controversial statues conversation. How do you kind of draw the line between Abraham Lincoln and Columbus and weigh the good and the bad?
I think the discussion is very healthy. And as an educator, I think having these discussions are good for the country. And facing our sometimes falsely written history, there was a false cause narrative that tried to recast what the Civil War was about. And so many of the monuments that sprung up in our country around the turn of the century were all about trying to recast narrative and paint things differently than are truly accurate. And so these discussions are very good in my mind, but this cancel culture that we seem to be in, canceling people for tweets they made when they were 17 years old, I'm a different president today than I was when I started in 2015. And so your question is difficult, because where is that line and who decides?
So there are two kind of approaches to revisiting controversial statues. One of them is to remove the statues entirely, but there's also the argument of reframing statues with more complete or accurate context. Do you have any thoughts on what that might look like in terms of Lincoln?
First, I'd be clear to say that I will hold my commitment. I'll go with our maintenance crew and I'll take every one of those Lincoln statues and bring them to our campus here in Central Illinois. It's challenging. I think it's important that people try not to get caught up in knee-jerk reactions. Every one of our presidents, I would argue, has been incredibly flawed. And in spite of their flaws, our country has grown and has moved forward. And so I think it's important that people dig in. Dig into the controversies. Understand individuals' faults, work to appreciate their accomplishments.
That's Lincoln College President David Gerlach talking with Dana Vollmer. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Many Illinois Republicans are calling for an independent redistricting process. This comes amid uncertainty when data from the U.S. Census Bureau will be available. Jason Berrickman of Bloomington is the Republican spokesperson for the Senate Redistricting Committee. With supermajorities in both houses, the Democrats control redistricting. Berrickman says Democrats should wait for accurate data to draw the maps that will be used for the next decade. Christine Hatfield speaks with Berrickman about the approach the Republicans plan to take as redistricting continues.
The public has been very clear in demanding that the state use independent commission in drawing their maps. The reality is that lawmakers should not be drawing their districts and they shouldn't be picking their voters. The second component is the data and the accuracy of the data. The Democrats, some Democrats, seem very focused on proceeding with a partisan map that uses inaccurate data this spring. And they're doing it over the objections of a multitude of community groups and activists who have spent years of their life on gathering census data and want us to use an independent process that uses accurate data.
Given the June 30th deadline, do you see the Democrats backing down from using some other form of data instead of waiting for the census?
By using bad data, they put at risk constitutional issues. The reality is that the courts have already found that using bad data is unconstitutional, and it's unfair to the communities who rely on accurate maps. So, I think the only reason why the Democrats are proceeding down this path of drawing a partisan map by June 30th is to fulfill their partisan goals.
You mentioned the courts have struck down having used bad data, but in a year like this where there's been a pandemic and everything going on in the census has been delayed, is this a different year than those previous times?
It's a different year, certainly, from the pandemic, but that doesn't give rise to why you would violate the Constitution. The Census Bureau is working tirelessly to get data to the states. We anticipate it here in a few months. I think it's important to use that data. Think of this, the federal government spent some $15 billion gathering census data. Governor Pritzker went all around the state. He spent maybe $30 million echoing to people all around the state the importance of obtaining census data so that individuals could be fairly represented in their districts. Yet here we are with Democrats proposing to not use that data and use something that is wholly inaccurate and unconstitutional. The public has long stood up and said they're tired of that. They want independence. They want fair maps. And this is our opportunity to do that.
You mentioned the data that they're planning on using being inaccurate. What makes you say that?
The federal census data is a count of the country's population, and it's broken down at the most local level, and that's the data for which we have historically used to draw our maps. The Democrats won't tell us what data they're actually going to use, although they've hinted at using something called an American Community Survey sample data. The sample data looks across the country samples based on, or based on small samples of the population. It's wildly inaccurate as compared to the census data, and that's the reason why community groups and minorities and others have long said it's really important that you use accurate data so that principles like one person, one vote, and the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution can be upheld through that use of accurate data.
Preliminarily, what do you think the results of redistricting are going to mean for your constituency and for the Bloomington area?
Ultimately, where those district lines lie are either going to be drawn by politicians, as they've done in the past, where they're drawing the maps and picking their voters, or it's going to be drawn through an independent commission that uses key principles in drawing independent maps. Things like making sure districts are compact and contiguous, that racial minorities are appropriately considered and represented, that communities of interest remain together. If lawmakers draw maps, we know that they're going to prioritize the location of incumbents. If the citizens of the state are prioritized, we're going to have maps that adequately represent them.
That's Senate Redistricting Committee Republican spokesperson Jason Berrickman. He spoke with Christine Hatfield. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.